podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. Welcome to Autosport's look back and analysis of day one of testing in Bahrain ahead of the new F1 season. I'll be joined today by our Grand Prix editor, Alex Kalanoukas, and GP Racing Magazine's editor, Stuart Codling. Now, before we get to our guys who are in Bahrain, let me take you through the timings. Not the timings matter hugely, because this is testing, but world champion Max Verstappen and Red Bull did top the timesheets with a 1 minute 32.837. They also put in a stunning 157 laps with Max behind the wheel, most teams opting to run two drivers on day one and changing over at lunchtime, doing the seat fittings, etc. But they chose to leave Max in the car all day. Now, Fernando Alonso had an unfortunate start to his Aston Martin career with some damage. That took a while to repair when he did finally come out. Bit of a glory run. I mean, if this is real pace, it's testing. There's no pace really on day one. But still, Fernando Alonso in green in the Aston Martin put in 60 laps in the end for a time of 1:32.866. The Ferraris of Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc would follow alongside, or just ahead of McLaren's Lando Norris, and the first of the Mercedes with Lewis Hamilton. Alex Albon in the first of the Williams in seventh, followed by Zhou Guan Yu in the Alfa Romeo, George Russell and Logan Sargeant. Great to see him making his debut in the Williams in 10th place. Talking of Williams, by the way, they together put in over 150 laps and and a really solid display of reliability for Williams. Flow, viz, paint, a go-go as they're working out all about their car. Now, let's start with talking about today and starting with Alex. You're part of the team that we've sent over to Bahrain to cover testing. A familiar name at the top of the timings here, Max Verstappen leading the way. We got to see the actual RB19 up close. They've got to be happy with today's work.
Well, I think you definitely prefer to finish at the top of the times than basically anywhere else. But no, you're right, Martin. That summary there is pretty good. They can have, frankly, no real complaints. I mean, I'm sure there are all the usual niggles going on in testing and everything will come out soon enough, or, well, depending on how tightly controlled Red Bull's media machine is. But yeah, great start. As you say, we saw the RB19 for the first time. Very, very similar to the RB18. I don't know, I guess it's because Red Bull have a reputation of being, you know, incredibly developing very well and introducing new ideas for their aero parts. You're a bit disappointed when it's not like suddenly doesn't look like a totally different car. But it dominated the championship last year, so no real reason to change, of course, for Red Bull. And as we know now, it was how well the car was riding compared to its rivals that really made the difference. So yeah, nearly 160 laps for Red Bull, sort of low fanfare, as I said. But you mentioned, Martin, you know, it's great to see the cars back on track again, how good they look on TV. I was really, really lucky to go out and spend actually a couple of hours trackside today. And I must say, if the Red Bull in particular, it looks pretty much as it did last year, running very, very stiff, but not wildly bouncing, not looking out of control or anything. It's planted and poised throughout all the corners. So yeah, really strong start for Red Bull.
And Codders, I want to talk about testing times because, yes, it's testing. No one's chasing performance and hot laps today. But remember, this morning they did 602 laps in total. Compare that to 449 this time last year on the first morning of Bahrain testing. But last year, we'd already spent 3 days in Barcelona. So they really did hit the ground and get some data. So we did see the Red Bull car today. What do you think of Max and the team topping the timesheets?
Very, very impressive. So yeah, three words. So that's getting on for 2.5 Grand Prix distances completed for Max today, over 150 laps, and largely uneventful. I think if the only negative thing that we saw happen was his mechanics accidentally dropped the car off its rear jack without the rear wheels attached late on, with about an hour to go before the end of the running. But apart from that, pretty seamless. A lot of flow viz around the car, which really helped us watching trackside and on the monitors in the press room to sort of pick out the curves and contours of where that car has changed. And it's very, very dramatically undercut around the side pods compared with last year is the sort of the headline change. But in common with quite a lot of the other cars, the nose has a sort of a slimmer aspect when viewed in profile. So when you're looking at it from head on, it looks more or less the same. If you look at the nose from side on, you can sort of see where they've been trying to shave weight away and gain some aerodynamic benefit. And the science that must have gone into making those noses pass the crash test is pretty incredible.
Now, Red Bull put Max in the car all day today, and most teams, the other teams, did a lunchtime driver swap. Because this track will come to the cars. The best of the performance will be as the temperatures dip down on the last day of testing. When the track fully rubbers in, hopefully we'll see some teams chasing some performance then, maybe taking some fuel out. But Max will be nowhere near the circuit. He'll be on his, you know, have his feet up somewhere and watching all this on F1 TV. And so, what does that say about the confidence of Red Bull and Max Verstappen that he'll just do his runs and then leave while everyone else is still at the track and and doing their final bits when Checo Perez will be in the car? What does that say about Red Bull?
Says a lot about Red Bull's confidence. Says a lot about Max's ability and his maturity to step away from the car at that point. You know, it used to be that he was a guy who had to win every session, and his ambition and, dare I say it, a little bit of ego and competitiveness wouldn't allow him to walk away if his name wasn't at the top of the timesheets, or potentially at the top of the timesheets. So for him to be able to walk away from the test halfway through and allow his teammate to get in the car and take it over when, as you say, theoretically, conditions might be better, it shows confidence in himself, shows he's happy in his own skin, shows the team doesn't really need to be setting massively quick lap times at this point in the season. It's all about getting the car dialed in, and certainly the reliability and the pace it's shown so far, with the caveat that testing times aren't particularly important, is pretty impressive.
All right, Alex, let's talk Ferrari next. They did move their head of strategy to a factory role. I'm sure that's not a demotion, simply moving people around the team as they need to. But look, no, seriously, though, Ferrari, it's impossible to say because they weren't chasing pace today. They were doing loads of aero setup work, and there were stays on the car and cameras pointing at various bits which were flexing or not flexing. But you were trackside. What do you think about how Ferrari looked today?
Oh, so I think certainly a much more interesting day, let's put it that way, for Ferrari. As you say, Martin, still close in terms of the times, but also to make a point for when those crucifying comments come in, I think at this particular time, there's been absolutely no performance running. You know, it's all about doing exactly what the teams wanted to do today, which is rack up the miles, get that reliability built in. And obviously, that's a big focus for Ferrari, looking at how 2022 ended up. But also, yeah, you mentioned the sort of news stories coming out around the strategy team. That will have, raised interest in the team. But I don't know if it was picked up, certainly in the morning running, the nose panel at the front of the Ferrari was sort of flexing really oddly, and you really don't want to be doing that sort of aero surface. That was absolutely not for performance reasons, before anybody gets carried away thinking about flexy noses or whatever. It's understood there was just a little bit of support structure that sits behind that part of the nose actually missing, and they very quickly fixed that. So yeah, not a big drama there at Ferrari, despite the fact it looked rather amusing. Sort of in the afternoon, when Charles Leclerc took over from Carlos Sainz, things were a little bit more stop-start in terms of the run plan, but I say that's nothing to be concerned about on the surface. What was interesting, and this has also picked up other TV cameras, was that the car does appear to be bouncing quite a lot more than certainly a lot of the other cars, particularly the Red Bull. Now, obviously, that's really the news because of the fact that the floors were raised to be higher, the rules were changed to eliminate porpoising. So I asked Frédéric Vasseur about that in the press conference, asked Toto Wolff about that as well, because Mercedes, of course, last year, very closely linked with porpoising, and both of them said it's not doing that. It's hitting a bump. There's a big bump on the entry into turn 12. I went out and watched that as the sun came down, the evening rolled in. All the cars are hitting it, but the Ferrari is quite dramatic, actually. And there's another big bump just opposite the pit exit on the run down to turn 1 that is triggering what does look like porpoising. But the team is absolutely clear. Vasseur said it's not as it was 1 year ago, where the car was bouncing like a kangaroo. So that's a positive thing for Ferrari. But it definitely seems to be more on the edge. And porpoising, despite the fact that, you know, it's then going to be less than an issue, it hasn't gone away. If you alter the setup or the ride too much, you're still going to get it. So the teams are always going to be concerned about that. But yeah, it, like I said, a more interesting day for Ferrari. Certainly not a disaster. Certainly not sort of shining, solid, all good so far.
And Cotter's, they've got the new boss in Frederick Vasseur. It's not his car, obviously, because he's relatively a new boss to the team. But he's already shuffling the pack, as it were, changing their strategy people around. What did you think of Sainz and Leclerc next to each other on the timesheets today? How did the red cars look?
Fred brings a certain amount of affability, and he's quite jovial during his encounters with the media. And it was interesting that he said, you know, I've only had my feet under the desk for 6 or 7 weeks, so it's early days yet. The team seemed pretty solid today, as you say. They've executed a change, and it was quite surprising to see the head of strategy get moved to a factory-based role. They said that they would undertake a full review. So who knows where this move has come from? It's in race strategy. It's a complicated subject, and people love to have an easy answer, and they love to have one person that they can sort of say they made the decision. And obviously when someone's job title is head of strategy, naturally the buck does stop with them. But strategy is about organisation and process and communication and lots of people individually making these calls based on probability and then feeding that through in an orderly way to the person who then makes the final decision, who then communicates it on. So it's a kind of like a posh kitchen in a Michelin-starred restaurant. You know, you have the chef patron's name above the door, and they might be standing at the pass looking at stuff before it goes out to the customer, but all the work is the result of a team of people doing things. So in some ways, it's interesting that Inaki Rueda has been moved sideways. What he's doing at the factory, who knows? It could be that he's going to take charge of process back in the room full of people that is the engine of strategic decision making. Maybe it was felt that he'd be better off there than on the pit wall. So he seemed to have in the restructure of 2021, he had a sort of a combination of sporting director and head of strategy role. So it's kind of represents a little bit of an unpicking of some of the management changes done under Mattia Binotto. So from that point of view, you could say it's Fred Vasseur saying, well, tell you what, why don't we do it this way and move this person a little bit sideways and have them doing something there. I mean, it could just be that he's been sent to Siberia in the classic Ferrari way. Who knows? We may never see or hear from him again.
Now, Alex, you know, you've mentioned bouncing, porpoising, Mercedes, call them two different things. However, it looked like the cars weren't suffering compared to 12 months ago. Toto Wolff said that it wasn't performance limiting. And of course, you can get rid of that by just raising the car up, which makes it slower. But so much work over the last 12 months has been done on the floors. And then we're gonna be a year of talking about flaws, I suspect. Not flaws, problems, but, you know, the floor of the car. And so underneath it, as it were. Alex, how did you think Mercedes did today?
Well, very solid, actually. You know, as you said, Martin, you allude to the porpoising and bouncing things being different. Rather unhelpfully, when I said to Toto Wolff, have you seen any porpoising today? He said, no bouncing. Now, we know that's a different thing when it comes to the suspension. Obviously, on the W14, both axles, the suspension has been really heavily reworked. So the fact that it should give a little more play, a little more travel, not be as near rock solid as it was last year, made things really, really tricky for the drivers in terms of, you know, ride stability. Basically, looking trackside, it looks a lot more planted. Like, we went out to turn 12 mainly to look at what the Ferrari was doing there, but the Mercedes didn't look too dramatic at all, because Toto did say that was the only time they were really seeing what could be interpreted as sort of like a bouncing or a porpoising or something. But again, it's hitting that bump going through turn 12. But yeah, what the other thing with the new Mercedes is that both drivers are quite adamant. They're like, you know, the last car might have been really quite terrible, but it was very, very reliable. Again, you know, they've done 150 odd laps today, so that's a very strong start on the reliability front for the Mercedes too.
Well, Cotters, of course, Mercedes have kept their zero side pods design. They didn't throw everything out and say, let's just copy Red Bull, because, of course, if they did, they'd be at least 12 months behind and more from that development race. So they've kept with their design philosophy, but you saw the cars on track today. What did you think of how Lewis Hamilton and George Russell showed today?
It looked okay. They were being a little bit cagey. there were a few moments where the car spent a while in the garage. Generally speaking, the drivers sort of seemed fairly happy. Toto Wolff in the press conference was reasonably happy. And as you say, he confirmed that it wasn't suffering any bouncing. There's a bump at the end of the straight, which all the cars were striking and jittering a bit afterwards. And he said there's also a little bit of movement around turn 12. That's the kind of very slightly uphill right-hander that where the car builds speed through the corner. So perhaps a little bit of movement through there isn't such a bad thing, or isn't something that you would actively try to dial out. It's something to be expected. And he said it wasn't performance limiting. All in all, pretty good, but at the moment, you know, with the caveat again, testing times don't really tell us anything. they seem in a better place than they were this time last year, for sure.
Okay, couple of quick questions to finish off. Let's talk a little bit about the midfield first of all, then we'll get on to Lance Stroll and how injured or not he is. But Alex, let's talk about the midfield. We asked today Red Bull's Adrian Newey who he thought the competition were, and he said obviously Mercedes, Ferrari and possibly Aston Martin. And so that's not a great result if you are McLaren or Alpine hoping to rise above the midfield. But how do you see that midfield pack panning out over the next few days?
Yeah, certainly a very positive day for Aston Martin in one sense, in that the car looks very fast, Fernando Alonso jumping up the times late on. But also, I think just the sense coming out of the team from just in terms of relating to the car, they're actually quite bullish. I think that sort of the sense is all where they are confident of making a step. And they were very good in 2022, and certainly going from, you know, being badly off the pace at the start of the season to be making a lot of progress heading towards the end. So the suggestion is that it's kicked on further, that the design around, you know, the aero surfaces is really getting a lot more sophisticated and things like that. So yeah, really do want to keep an eye on Aston Martin. I know we're going to come on potentially to talk about what's going on with Lance Stroll and Felipe Drugovich later on, but just in terms of the car for the Aston, I think that's something to really, really keep an eye on. Alpine and McLaren, you know, it's similar to what they were saying at their launch events. Alpine is confident it can kick on, McLaren a bit more pessimistic, and nothing I've seen today, you know, really disputes that. But as I said, because there's been no performance running, it's really hard to say that at the same time. What I would say is, will we perhaps see the midfield teams switching to something more akin to sort of a glory run? They don't really do the sort of that sort of thing, you know, send it out on fumes and do a completely fast lap anymore in the modern era. But you know, if you're looking for a happy story, maybe one of the teams would be keen to put on some softer tyres or something like that and get some positive coverage that way. But yeah, you know, like I said, I think Aston looking like the bigger mover, or at least confident of being that. Whether it turns out to be true, not sure yet.
And finally, Alex, let's talk Aston Martin. Today, Lance Stroll wasn't in the car because Felipe Drugovic was standing in for Lance Stroll. He's had a cycling accident. We think it's at least damage to one wrist. One well-respected F1 journalist I saw reporting today that he has damaged or broken both wrists. That is, I must say, at the time of recording, most certainly not the official line. But look, if he was around, he'd be in Bahrain. They'd have put just, you know, Alonso in the car for the whole day and just let Stroll have the full day tomorrow. So I suspect there's hopefully some updates to come from Aston Martin, and we wish, obviously, Stroll a quick recovery if he has properly hurt himself on that mountain biking accident. But how do you think that Drugovich did today, and how do you think they're going to play the Lance Stroll situation?
So let's start with Stroll first. The official line coming out of the team is that they won't even talk about it to discuss his injuries, although Mike Crack, the team principal, did reveal that it's related to the injuries, is related to his wrist. That's what he's damaged in that mountain biking accident. So yeah, that's obviously very concerning. You know, in these sort of things, you do want to respect someone's privacy, but obviously it's a key thing for the team at this time of year. I think the suggestion that the paddock whispers, the paddock rumours are, it is quite severe, and it would be unlikely to see Stroll definitely in testing and maybe even for the race too. Now that may not come to pass, but the suggestion from talking to other teams is, yeah, it's looking not good for seeing Lance Stroll making his 2023 debut on time as planned. The team is supposed to be understood to be releasing some news tonight about Felipe Drugovich carrying on, if he is going to be carrying on for the rest of the test, or at least taking any more part in the test. You know, they said that they were taking it almost hour by hour. They would make the decision during the afternoon running. In terms of Felipe Drugovich, yeah, I thought he acquitted himself very well, despite the fact not his fault, got off to a very unfortunate start. There was an electrical gremlin on the Aston, triggered a sensor problem and basically shut down the car, caused that one red flag of the day. So it's interesting, you know, without that, we could have got through the whole day without a single red flag. You know, he seems confident, very relaxed. He's always, I've interviewed him once for GP Racing Magazine, Autosport's sister title at Austin last year after he won the F2 title. He's a very relaxed, confident guy, and he seemed happy enough after he got out of the car. He was the only driver in the press conference that actually driven the car, so he was able to give a nice bit of insight on that.
Well, thank you, Alex. Thank you, Connors, as well, for both of your analysis on today's podcast, the first of three that we'll make over testing in Bahrain. Thank you very much for listening to the Autosport podcast. We did a launch season, now we're into testing, then we'll be into a brand new season of the Autosport podcast as we cover every single race weekend and, of course, filling in the bits in between with not just Formula One, but there's plenty of F1 to talk about on this channel. If you are not subscribed on your favorite podcast platform, I'm guessing you are because you're listening to this, but a reminder, if you've just discovered us, you can do that very easily. You can follow this channel and get your Autosport podcast for free. Some would say it's worth every penny that you pay for it. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you in less than 24 hours time for day two on the podcast. Catch you then.
Podcast Network.